session number 28698, reel 17.
Having completed the 1976 tour, did every tour end with leave, or did you come back straight into a leave situation?
Yeah, you always came back and had leave wherever you could get leave fitted in, and try and equalise yourself for 3 weeks and fetch yourself back to being human again. At the end of a hard tour, you didn't come back 100% human, and I'm sure the wives and the children found this.
I think it must have been... You must have pretty exceptional ladies there. I mean, they're in England, you're in Ireland. Every time they turn the television on, if there's a bomb gone off or there's something, they must be worried sick about you. They're under pressure whilst you're away.
While you're in Ireland, if it was one of yours got killed or it was involved in the bomb and you knew it was going to be on telly, there'd be an instant telephone block in Ireland, so nobody could ring out to say what had gone on. That was easy, you just cut the telephones off. But there'll be signals sent back to your battalion to warn the wives, because the next of kin must be told first before anybody else in the public world gets to know. And once the public had been told, the next of kin had been told, then the public could be told. But the family's officer would get everybody together and say what had happened. So there'll be no rumours, no nothing, and if the television picked it up wrong or anything like that, the battalion would know the truth before anybody else, before it came on television. So it was always everybody knew. If it wasn't your battalion involved, same thing, a signal will get back and say, you're going to see on the news tonight that was a massive explosion, somebody was hurt, it was not to a lie. So you get told straight away again, so the wives wouldn't be looking thinking, no, what happened in England, I don't know. So if you weren't with the battalion and got told, but you'd gone back to your parents or somebody in England, they wouldn't get that message. So unless you were the wife of somebody who'd been hurt, and then as next again, you'll be told first anyway.
So you obviously came back, you did your 3 weeks leave, and then what happened to you?
We had our leave and we had a brilliant Christmas and everything else. Cause like I say, Lemgo and stuff like that was the business to
be. You're back to Germany now.
We're back in Lemgo in Germany. And like anything else, you've got to catch up with your fitness training, your exercises, your shooting, your first aid, your signals, your carters, your NCOs carters. Because remember, you've gone around another year, so everybody needs to be retrained in your normal peacetime role or your Northwest European role. So that went on, which brought us nicely into July, and the whole battalion went off to exercise in Soltau again and did the big brigade exercises, which were always fantastic. And which brought us round then to about July. And of course, July, as we know, was in 77, was the Queen's Jubilee parade, where there was rehearsals and just about everybody in the British Army of the Rhine had to muster on Sennelager, where your APCs painted a certain colour and a shape, and your chains were all painted silver, and your tow hooks were all silver, and everything was a party piece for the Queen's Silver Jubilee. I was anti-tank still, and we got sent off to Putlos again for the Putlos concentration. So we didn't have to do that. But the QM hadn't realised that. And there was an order came out, you must spray everything. Nothing must be brush painted. And it's all got to be to this certain pattern that the army said every vehicle would look exactly the same. Of course, we were slapping our paint on because we knew we were going to Putlos for 6 weeks. And the QM was going to jail me and everybody else had anything to do with me till we had to tell them, but we aren't going on the Silver Jubilee parade, we're going to Putlos. So we got away with that by the skin of our teeth.
Were you a sergeant by this time? Were you, had you three stripes? Because you've been an intelligence sergeant, I think you said, in Ireland.
Right, I was coming up to the end of my anti-tank part of that. The battalion were aimed off and they were the new... Well, we've got the Silver Jubilee out the way, and that went exceptionally well. It was well televised anyway. We did exceptionally well at Putlos again, and that was my last part of anti-tank guns and concentrations. And it was then I had to come back from there and go to Kent, to the School of Intelligence, and do a full course of interrogation, question techniques, and intelligence in Northern Ireland. No one I was going there then to do a 2-year intelligence sergeant at battalion level. So I did all that, and I physically left with the rest of the incel the week before Christmas.
What techniques were they teaching you?
It was the question-answer techniques, or how to drive through streets and look like a civilian without being suspicious, how to stand in pubs and restaurants and listen and mentally take notes, or if you had a tout or an informer who wanted to talk to you by appointment, where you could sit in a public place and mentally take all these notes in or write them somehow, where if you were captured, you wouldn't have any incriminating evidence against you or the people who've been talking to you in. And you learn all that kind of techniques. And it was at that stage that I stopped letting anybody photograph me, because you get warned about being photographed and stuff like that. Although while you're in the intelligence world photograph you in case you turn at some stage of your life. And really, that's why you don't see many photographs of me about. I wouldn't let anybody ever take my photograph after doing these kind of courses. So I left.
And was this just for intelligent people that these photographs were barred, or was it across the battalion that you did?
No, it's just intelligence cell. You go and get heavily impregnated with up-to-date intelligence and how to run an intelligence cell and stuff like that.
Because you'd be quite a capture, I suppose, if anybody got hold of you. Yeah. Recognising got hold of you.
At low level, yeah. Well, it depends what you're doing, yeah. So we all left at Christmas week and went to Ballochinlareely to take over, or to be on the patch for a month at least before the battalion came across, because we were taken over from the Black Watch.
What date was this?
December 77. So we got across there.
So are we going back to Ireland now?
Yes, because unless you want to hear about.
What day did you move to Gibraltar?
Well, we came out of Ireland in July, and we were given a month's leave in England in preparation to move into Gibraltar. If you had a family or somebody you could go and stay with, you could go and stay anywhere you wanted in England. I didn't have anybody to stay with as such, although all my family were up in Durham. So I took a surplus married quarter in Catterick. And I went down to Catterick for the 4 weeks and brought my mother to me to see the grandchildren for a couple of weeks. We had a lovely holiday and went out for day trips to Redcar and Whitby and places like that. But we stationed ourselves in Catterick. And I kept my mother with me. And then when I took her home, we had to move off then to London to meet up at a hotel with the rest of the people who were going across to Gibraltar. Then went off to whichever airport we went to. I can't remember, to tell the truth. And we flew into Gibraltar.
And the family again with you?
Yeah, the family with us. Lock, stock and barrel, all the kids. Got into Gibraltar. We knew as D Company we were going to be the ceremonial company for the first month. So me and the Sergeant Major and our corporals and the convent guard, as it was called, the Governor's House Guard, we immediately got into the ceremonial mode, and we had to watch how our predecessors, the Queen's Battalion, how they were doing it. So we were into white gloves, short-sleeved shirts and hats. And we did drilled day in, day out, day in, day out, while my wife and the children were trying to unpack the boxes. Except my wife was so disgusted with the state of the army quarter they gave us, she refused to march into it. So my boxes stayed on the veranda for about the first 3 weeks, I think, of Gibraltar. And all I did was take out my ceremonial uniforms.
Did you get a better married quarter?
No, the family's office came down, saw the state of it, accepted that it wasn't in a good state, and promised to get a Moroccan or somebody in to paint it, which they did eventually. Apart from, they opened all the cupboards, took my uniforms out, painted inside the cupboards, put my uniforms back in and closed the doors. So I had paint on everything. The wife finally then settled down to the quarter, did it her way, unpacked, and made it into home. So it's now about September before I was starting to get a proper normal life. And we did the first duties as well.
This is September what year?
79. So in the convent guard, the governor's house guard, which mounts every Monday morning, I'm sure you've seen on telly, it's a tourist event as well. So everybody coming off the ships as tourists would all go to the centre of Gibraltar to watch the changing of the guard. And we were getting quite professional at it now. And it was a set piece, obviously later to be spied on by the IRA again when they were going to blow the army up. But the SAS got there first. However, we settled into Gibraltar life, and when you weren't on ceremonial guards and things like that, you had your normal living to do. You know, we had rangers, we had indoor rangers, we had the tunnels to explore and train in, and different parts of the Gibraltar rock that you could also train on. And of course, then you had the leisure parts, because we had a water trainership centre, so you could sail, canoe, dinghy, you could learn anything to do with water sports. And of course, we had our own infantry beach, so yeah, your own beach, which the locals weren't supposed to go on, but they did anyway. But it was where soldiers could go and be soldiers with your families. And life was pretty tinky-boo, and of course the weather was absolutely brilliant, and that took us through to the Christmas as well. And Christmas in Gibraltar was strange, because you could walk in shorts and a t-shirt on Christmas Day down the beach, which was quite unusual. But there we were in Gibraltar doing our guards and duties. And
could you move into Spain?
No, you couldn't. The border was closed. You used to guard Spain, guard at the Four Corners guard room, and Spain was all of 5 yards away, but you couldn't get through the gate. But you did 6 o'clock of the night, you did the little ceremony thing with the band and the bugles and everything else, and they would come up with their tin pot little band, and they'd do the same on the other side, and they'd march away and you'd march away, and that was the closest you could get to Spain. To get to Spain, you had to go to Morocco and then go in from Morocco to Spain. In fact, I was one of the first married soldiers to go off Gibraltar, because you used to get off the rock money, and providing you didn't go back to England for your leave, you could get paid to go somewhere else, to Africa, to Australia. So I hired a couple of caravanettes, and me and another sergeant and his family and my family, we went to Morocco with these two caravanettes, Sherpa caravanettes, and we toured Morocco for a fortnight, and it was absolutely brilliant. We went, you know, to Tangiers and to Fez and to Marrakesh and Safi and Casablanca and every other place. We put thousands of miles in, and it was absolutely brilliant.
Were you always on this ceremonial duty whilst you were in Gibraltar?
No, just when it was my company's turn. But if it was my company's turn, I ended up being the guard commander, the platoon sergeant who did all the ceremonial guards. One, because I was good at it. Two, I looked good and smart in them days. And the governor and the governor's wife used to like me standing there screaming and shouting orders out.
Were you still with D Company?
I was still D Company, yeah. I did a good old day. And I've now got a platoon commander, young Rex Sartain, who's a full colonel now, actually.
What was the calling, sorry?
Rex Sartain, son of a Royal Engineer Brigadier, I think.
And was he all right?
He was all right, as young people straight from the factory go. We trained him well. And the other thing he used to do in Gibraltar, because you couldn't do extensive training, Gibraltar being the size, you used to have an exercise rock sand where you came back to England for 3 weeks to Salisbury Plain, to a place called West Down Camp. And we came back to do the inter-platoon competition at one stage, and we won it. We were the first platoon to win it, which saved all Rex Sartain's life, actually, because he wasn't the best officer in the world, and they all, I think, wanted to get rid of him. But because we won the competition, they couldn't do that anymore. So
presumably he grew up,
though. He did. He grew and grew, yeah. But he had a heart of gold, still has. And like I say, he's still serving now 30 years later and doing a good job.
So what were your duties and responsibilities when you weren't on the ceremonial side of it?
If you were the guard company, you did the guards. If you were a training company, you'd do your training. And you'd do all your things like your map reading and anything else, normal training, normal shooting. There was an awful lot of sport. I mean, Gibraltar was good for sport. And of course, again, while we're out there, we did the Queen's Birthday Parade on the 14th of June. But we did other things as well, like tattoos and sound and retreat for the local dignitaries. Because when you got the big band, because we still had our own regimental band then, again, your band was a tourist item as well, and they'd go down the docks and they'd play the play to the Cunard ships coming in and all that kind of thing. So if the battalion had gotten in trouble with the RMPs or the governor of Gibraltar, you just put something on for the band and bugles, and they'd say, oh, how wonderful and how smashing, and then the whole battalion would get out of trouble again. So the band and bugle were used a lot to get us in and out of, or to get us out of trouble. We got ourselves into trouble enough.
I was going to say, what kind of trouble are you talking about?
Well, because it's like a goldfish bowl over there, you know, there's no... And then the young soldiers will be soldiers, and I think there's about 365 drinking places in Gibraltar, believe it or not, for the size of it. Soldiers could... He wouldn't get into trouble. Soldiers are soldiers. If you let a soldier go, he'll find his own way home, and he won't say, well, you put a block in his way, like saying, you're jailed, I'm going to jail you. Of course, he'll fight for survival, and he'll get himself into trouble. And we had a couple of Royal Military policemen at the time who used to look for the soldier on his own, antagonise him into saying something wrong, and then arrest him. Because they were just as bored, because they had nothing to do. For all, you had a Navy contingent on the island, and you had an Air Force contingent on the island. The biggest majority of them were the soldiers, the resident battalion and the resident engineer squadron. So the RMPs had nothing to do, really, so they go around arresting anybody. And luckily, at the time, we had an RSM who realised what was happening. And he would take the prisoners back off, and then he'd tear the charge sheet and chuck them away. Because the soldiers had been arrested for doing nothing more than maybe peeing in the street or being drunk and trying to get a taxi back home, and the RMPs would pick them up. And if the guy collapsed in the back of the car or Land Rover and went to sleep, the next thing we do, instead of taking him back to his barracks, which he promised, they'd take him to the guard room and jail him. So there was a bit of hit and run. And of course, you had the local radio on the rock for the BFBS. So the D company, my company, if they knew the RMPs were after them, they'd ring the radio up and say, can you put a request on for the RMPs? And it'll be... catch us if you can. And the RMPs would hear this and they'll go mad and say, and they'd bring the BFBS and would say, oh, well, can you put the, what do you call it, on the roll and stone, saying, we'll get you in the end. And and of course, the officers used to listen to BFBS and say, what is going on? And you could hear these messages from companies back to the RMPs go in the titles of songs, and it was hilarious. So it was a good life. But boring for the families again in the end, because they couldn't get off anywhere. We were training all the time or doing something, even if it was sailing and canoeing and things like that. But the wives had very little to do. And there's only so much sunbathing you can do. So.
And were the children in an army school on the rock?
They were back in the army schools. And they were good as well. And the best about that, all the kids learned to swim properly. And they did lots of things outside. So, I mean, it was a good, healthy life for them.
And so, it was pretty routine army, really, wasn't it?
No, it was. It was more like, it was a peacetime location
home,
again.
Yeah, home station kind of thing.
Yeah, it was peacetime location.
Did you have any rivalry with the Navy and the RAF?
No.
Causing any fisticuffs?
No. If it was anybody, the submariners, when they've come in, but remember, they'd been underwater for 3 months and they were all punch drunk and they would cause a bit of bother. But to get around that, the CO said, right, officers will take any officers off the ships and the submarines to their messes, sergeants to the sergeant's mess, corporals to the corporal's mess, and they would organise football matches and rugby matches and things like that between the soldiers and the sailors. And that used to squash, because they'd come on in dock for 3 days. So we'd entertain them for 3 days and we had some brilliant socialising with them. So, I mean, life was good with them as well. But we used to have a darts match between the messes as well. The science messes and the local civilian dockyards and stuff like that. So you'd play at the RAF or you'd play at the Navy or you'd play at the civilian organisations or you'd play in our mess. And again, the socialising was brilliant. But we'd always have retreats, again, for the public and the local dignitaries. And the Queen's birthday parade was a fantastic spectacular because we're all in white uniforms. And then we had a tattoo before we left there, where we had all the local dignitaries, and I think some Spanish over, and it was based on the siege of Gibraltar. And of course, you had the Spanish dignitaries come across for that as well. 3,000 people came to watch it, and we raised £250,000 for the local charities. But that was fantastic. And each company had to do a reenactment of something. And some did Northern Ireland, believe it or not, and with the old box formation and stuff like that. I am, and they had big arms 20 yards long, you know. I am the signaller. I am the scriber. So, and the people were in, and we did the siege of Gibraltar.
Prices, with it being a holiday retreat as well, were prices high for you? Did you have to meet the same prices as the tourists?
Three prices. You had the local Dago prices, tuppence a dozen. You'd get the resident battalion prices, if they recognise you, fourpence a dozen. And then if you got the tourist in, there'd be three times, four times, five times as much for the tourists. So if you went out to buy a leather bag and they said, oh, that is £20, you say, no, we live on the rock. Well, that's £10, but don't tell the tourists. And then you see them selling the same bag to a local for £5. So you quickly worked out, you know, oh, that's how the system works. If you didn't say anything, like the shy young couples, the young married wives, if they didn't say, oh, I live on the rock, you know, I belong to 2LI, they'd be paying the £20 instead of the 10 or 5. And if you're brave enough, you say, no, if you're selling that to a local Gibraltar for 5, I want it for 5. And if you're brave enough to do that, you got away with it. And you pay the low prices.
Were there other army units on the rock?
Engineers. An engineer squadron, that was all.
So it was basically a battalion posting?
It was a battalion posting, but you had the post headquarters, like the brigade headquarters, if you want, because of its political situation. And of course, we were supposed to be working Gurkha hours, because you do your fitness training at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then you start working at 7 o'clock or 6:30. And you were supposed to finish at 1:30. Okay. Our battalion never finished at 1:30 because they knew what would happen. You finish at 1:30, we just go downtown and get drunk all the time. So we actually worked all day long. For all the rock commander would say, but you can fall your battalion out, you know, at lunchtime, and that it's too hot in the afternoon to work. It never happened to us. We worked all the time.
Was there any awareness that there could be some problems with Spain and you might be involved? I'm thinking in terms of defence. Were there any defensive measures in case Spain?
Oh, yeah. We had our OPs, our Sangers, on the border post looking at La Linha. And that was, if you were the only Spanish coming across that strip of water or around that way, that's exactly what we're there to do. And you watch them 24 hours a day. Them Sangers were manned 24 hours a day watching the Spanish border.
Anything else on Gibraltar?
Yeah, on the 6th of October, which is Gibraltar Day, which is another one of our battle honours, of course, although it's a KSLI one, I think. HMS Invincible came in for 3 weeks, and that was 3 weeks of social and sport. Clear pigeon, boxing, rugby, cricket, drinking, dances. We did everything with HMS Invincible, because it's affiliated to us anyway as a battalion. So, I mean, that was good. And again, the second year is where we went back to SPTA for exercise high tide, which was, you know,
SPTA?
Salisbury Plain Training Area. Again, to do your 3 weeks exercise. And on that particular one, the CO put us through exercise all Towler. And where he, because we've really been out, we've been to Ireland, we hadn't done Northwest European fighting for nearly 4 years now. So he put us through every phase of war. The attack, the withdrawal, the defence. We did every phase of war you could in 3 weeks. And then coming to the end of Gibraltar, I was told I was going off to the depot as a training sergeant. So I didn't want to go, and I said I didn't want to go, but we just got back from Salisbury Plain, and he says, in fact, I was on Salisbury Plain, and he says, ring your wife up in Gibraltar and tell her to start packing your married quarter up in 2 weeks' time when you get back from here. Your boxes need to be packed and you're coming back to England to go to Shrewsbury. So, again, Christmas week, again, 18th of December, I got on the flight from Gibraltar and flew to London, then from London by train up to Shrewsbury. And I got sent to Shrewsbury Depot as a training sergeant at the depot.